Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys meet with Max Ferguson, a young investment entrepreneur here in Denver, Colorado, and talk about real estate investing, all while sipping on Maker's Mark Barrel Strength Bourbon. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Fathom Realty, Keller Williams Downtown, and sponsored by the Rouge and Wine Bourbon Bistro in Greenwood Village. My name is Charlie Sardelli, and as always, I'm here with
Jameson Amoros.
And Oscar isn't here again. He's doing some more work down in the Springs, but we got somebody to step in for him, an agent by the name of Max Ferguson, who is out of Colorado Springs, and he is very tapped into the investment world, has been doing it for, one could say, generations.
Years and years.
Years and years. Runs in the family. So this episode...
It is ironic. Oscar went down in the Springs. And we just said, fuck it, we're going to bring somebody up from the Springs.
Yep.
Easy enough.
Right? Good trade. Right? I need to keep the balance. But on today's episode, that's what we're going to talk about, all about investing, kind of things about how to get into it, things to look forward to or look for. Is it even worth investing in real estate in the current market in the state of the United States? I don't know. We'll see. The answer is obvious.
I like how you're slowly turning into more cynical.
Yeah.
Over the last like 3 months, it's been a fun evolution.
I'm trying not to be cynical. Yeah. But you know what? Sometimes the world chooses these things. Max, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Give yourself a little bit of a background to the listeners and viewers.
Yeah. Okay. So I grew up around rentals. My dad owned one commercial building, one apartment complex, 5 single family homes. I got my degree in real estate and land use economics from University of Nebraska, Omaha. I went on to do apartment acquisitions for a company with about 11,000 units, if I'm not mistaken. Did that for a while, underwrote a ton of commercial multifamily at the absolute peak, which was, you know, late 21, 22-ish range. Decided to move to Colorado and become a residential broker, help people, you know, around my age, younger folks, try to get into houses that they generally couldn't afford. We bought a duplex that we absolutely had no business getting into. But I looked at it and my tenants pay now 2/3 of the mortgage, and on the back end with tax benefits and, you know, real estate professional with the write-off and everything, we live for free plus utilities. So $600,000 asset getting paid for itself each month, gain equity each month, get a percentage net worth increase of 1 or 2% every time I pay that mortgage. And so fell in love with house hacking, which has been very tough and not the most viable with the rate increase. But we got the last, I like to say, 3.5% before it skyrocketed, which I was pretty upset about. I was like, this is BS. I have a perfect credit score, all that. And then the next year when they were at 7%, I was like, okay.
I'm the smartest person I know.
Right. I'm okay here. So offered on 6 other duplexes we've tried to occupy in the last, you know, 2-3-ish years, ever since we kind of left or adhered to the year-long, you know, no mortgage fraud clause thing for the owner-occupied. And nothing, you know, has worked out, and my numbers are lean. Just because I'm in the know, and I want another home run like the first one, but it might just need to be a base hit, so to speak. So we're looking at flips, looking at converting a, you know, single family into a couple different units. ADU laws have become extremely, well, far more lenient.
Yep.
And so any attached garage in Colorado Springs now, you can convert to a unit. Lots of different fun things. But yeah, it's been a fun, I guess, 4 years now in Colorado Springs.
So that's awesome. Yeah. And if you guys can't tell by that, he knows what he's talking about.
Yep. There's a lot of foreshadowing in there. I heard house hacking, which I wanted to talk about. I heard ADUs, which I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. We heard interest rates.
All the keywords
were thrown out there. So I'm excited. I think Max has a unique perspective too, because, you know, part of the reason I wanted to bring somebody like him on was when you hear about real estate investing, it's always like, I don't want to say the old heads, but like people that did it back in the day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as we talk about it all the time, the two biggest generations coming up, obviously millennials number one, and then Gen Z is coming up. And if you go on TikTok or Instagram reels or anything, and you're in the real estate side of TikTok, I'd say 70% is centered around investing.
Yeah.
So I think that younger generation is going to come up, and part of it, you know, whether it's rates, whether it's affordability, like we talked about, may be forced into that earlier than previous generations, finding ways to house hack, finding ways to convert garages. So Max has a really cool, unique perspective. And Colorado Springs is a very unique market too. So,
well, top three market in the country based on the newest report.
What else do we do on this podcast, Charlie?
I forget. Drink bourbon and whiskey.
Thank God. Yes. I had a hell of a day yesterday.
Yes, sir. And on today's episode, what we're going to be drinking is the Michter's Barrel Strength Kentucky Straight Rye Whiskey. So as you guys know, we kind of teeter back and forth between ryes, bourbons, whiskeys.
Not because we're drunk. No. We teeter back and forth.
Yes. And this one.
Common misconception.
This one is going to be sitting at 111 proof, so 55.5%.
Gross.
And yeah, if you're on the... if you're on the video, you can see the color of this bottle, 100% of rye, and it's even darker with the barrel strength. So this is, Max, what is it like bourbon drinking, whiskey drinking for you?
Gasoline.
Yeah? So, honestly, we love
this is actually going to be one of the first ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lauren.
Lauren was
the other
Lauren
one.
Lauren and Silk.
Oh, yeah, Silk.
Those two, yep.
Silk drinks bourbon now, by the way.
Really?
She does.
I love that.
Yep.
Hey, there you go.
So if there's anything that you have to, like, practice to get into, you know, I generally abstain. I've heard you got to just do it a lot, and then you're like, oh, this is great. So maybe after today.
I'm in the same boat as you. Like, when I first started drinking, I was like, why the hell would anybody do this?
Yeah.
And now it's... like 111 proof. It's funny because we're drinking like 120 to 130. Yeah. I think last week was 130.
I don't even know. And
it's just so crazy to me because I was there. I was like, why the hell would I want to do something you have to acquire a taste for? Like, but it just the conversations that it brings.
Brussels sprouts. Why am I going to do it with fucking bourbon? You know what I'm saying?
I love it. But yeah, this one's going to be interesting. And I'm gonna be real with you, Max. You're starting with one that's made to put hair on your chest.
Based on your last listing photos. Or the little thing you posted on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you need any more hair on that chest. That was great, bro.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm going to go ahead and pour this out.
Well, Charlie pours that out. And Max, to your point, so I always tell the story. My buddy JC, who passed away 3 years ago, him and I, we just one day decided that we wanted to start drinking bourbon because we were huge Captain and Coke fans. That's all we drank, right?
Yeah, that's a good
You know
drink.
What I'm saying? Yeah, but we realized how unhealthy it is. And somewhere we read that just drinking bourbon straight is a lot healthier, less sugar and less calories. That's how it started.
Sure.
And then we just sat down one day because him and I lived like 3-4 houses down from each other at the time. And every night we would just pick up a bottle of bourbon and we would just take sips until we couldn't anymore, then put water in it. And then after like months, less water, less water, less water. And then something happened like a year after that we just... took a turn into
I even just
Kentucky.
Remember the first like three episodes when we were still in the office.
Yeah.
They were taking sips of it and they would be like, oh, you want to taste? And I'd sip it and be like, oh, this is good.
This is great.
This is really hot. I didn't taste anything.
This is great.
This is great. Yeah, exactly. We had like,
this
I think,
is so enjoyable.
I think it was like Eagle Rare or something was one of the first bottles that they had. And I remember I was like, this is top notch.
Oh, I can smell that from here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I brought the Angel's Envy over to my mom's house 2 days ago because they were celebrating something. And my dad likes to think he is a drinker, and so my mom, she'll drink this neat.
Oh, hell just, yeah!
And she's all.
We have her on the
she's
show.
She's all 5'2", 107 pounds, right? And she pour one, and she goes, "Oh man, this is really good." Like she's getting into it, whatever. And then my dad's like, "Yeah, pour me one." And my mom looks at him and goes, "Luis, are you sure? Like, do you remember what this is?" He goes, "No, it's fine. We're celebrating." Grabs it. He puts a big old ice cube on it. He goes, sets it down. He goes, "Oh yeah, I see why you guys like that." And then like 10 minutes goes by. Doesn't touch it. Then he looks at it and he just goes, here, Kristen, you finish it.
I love
like,
that.
Yep. I not love quite it. There yet.
And again, Max, don't think like, seriously, we know that this is something that's out of the ordinary. So don't think that you have to like enjoy yourself. Give us your honest review on it because like I said, we do this weekly and it's nice for us to get the insight into somebody who doesn't normally drink it. So
it's also like a baptism by fire type of thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
But what do you normally drink if you have a cocktail of choice?
Vodka soda.
All right. I love it. Yeah, okay.
I drink to get drunk. I don't drink to enjoy it.
Well, then this is perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can do both. You there. Once you actually enjoy it, you can.
Yeah, no. And I'm be real with you. Just I'm sorry, Max. I'm sorry that this is the one. Only because
no, it's gonna be great.
Even for us, the nose on this is hot.
It's kind of like getting into real estate investing, right? Like you really gotta. You can't just sometimes the best way to do it is just jump in, figure mm-hmm. it out later, you know?
I'm extremely interested.
So am I. This is like, this is hot for me too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This is it burns. Yeah. There's a lot of ethanol to it.
Yep.
But it makes sense because it's rye. Because so just so you know, ryes, yeah. they're when it's rye heavy, there's not normally not a lot of that malted barley. So it tends to be a lot more crisp and like bitter.
And ethanol-y.
Yeah. So and that kind of adds to the alcohol. Ryes also tend to be a little bit more spicy
sure.
on the front. So again, do not feel as if like if we ask you, oh, what are you getting from this? If you're not getting anything, say I'm not getting anything because yeah. we want that
like
insight.
Alcohol.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I want to hear.
Tastes like what I put in my car.
Yeah.
And so, what's the process to make this alcohol? You know, because you're talking.
Oh yeah.
Rye, wheat, yeah. barley.
So this.
Things.
Yeah. So with distillation, normally bourbon whiskey, but normal is 3 years. They put it in the barrel, let it sit. Pulls in the flavor of the barrel, but it mostly comes down to the mash bill. And with bourbons, a lot of the time you're going to have corn, rye, and barley, like mm-hmm. wheated barley. Okay. And the barley and wheat is what gives it that sweetness, that caramel, more honey kind of flavor. And then most of the flavor comes from pulling from the wood. That's where you get like the vanilla, more of those earthy tones, some spices from it.
Yeah.
The rye is because it's leaning more grain. You're not getting that. You're not actually getting the sweetness from the malted barley. It's dry.
It also determines whether or not it's a bourbon or a whiskey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. So what's the percentage that it has to be for a bourbon? It's 51-49.
51-49.
51 mm-hmm. rye, 49.
No, 49. 49 corn. No, 51 corn. Jesus.
51 rye, 49 corn.
Yes.
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 Yeah. So for it to be a bourbon, 51 rye, 49 corn. Good. This is a whiskey.
Yep. Okay.
Which means that it doesn't have enough corn in it.
And most of the time when you get a rye specific, it's just...
Guys, I'm from Nebraska.
Yeah. So I'm saying...
I want more corn.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You don't get any corn in this one.
Yeah, there ain't no
corn. Corn here.
So I want to add, like, Jamie, what are you getting on the nose?
A lot of ethanol.
There's bourbon. The sweet is there.
The sweet is there. Yeah. There's vanilla in it.
100% vanilla. A little bit of caramel, chocolate.
Yeah.
Like
a
cherry.
A lot of cinnamon.
You getting cinnamon?
Yeah.
I'm getting cinnamon. Maybe like allspice.
Yeah. Not the sweet cinnamon. Just
yes.
like a fucking stick that you would snap in half and be like,
did you know that cinnamon is just the bark of a tree?
Unfortunately, I've seen that.
Yeah.
On facts.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Actually, yeah. I didn't know that either.
It's literally just the bark that they dry out and then shave down.
No. Oh. Sweet. So I can just go out to my yard and just really? Create my own cinnamon.
Any
find a cinnamon
tree.
Tree.
You're good.
Sweet.
Peel it off.
Perfect. And last week's episode was actually really cool. We had a barrel sales specialist. So he came in and told us the difference in cost value of different oaks from America, from France, from, I mean, what was it? Canada?
Spain.
Just everywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
It was such a great insight. So if you guys are tuned in, check out that episode. I apologize. I've been slacking on posting and editing.
You're good.
But we'll get those up for you guys. What are you getting on the nose, Max? What is it? Just alcohol for you? Just burning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing I say is going to be of value. At this
No. And like I said, I honestly love it because this is where like, if you don't drink bourbon, we don't get that insight.
Yeah.
Like, oh no.
And
is
I
this
would also.
Be good?
This is a unique circumstance. I would never. If like Max, you came over and you're like, I'd like to try bourbon for
I
the
would
first
never
time.
Give you this.
This is not what I would give you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be like, here you go, buddy. Suck it up.
Yeah. No. You're taking one for the team on this episode for sure. I'm going to go ahead and get the sip in, but before we do that, cheers. Thanks for coming on. It's okay. You don't have to reach.
In my new Achilles days, I could get over there and walk.
All right. Holy shit.
The burn goes away.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on.
It does warm the esophagus.
Wow!
But it's not as intense as I thought it was going
to
be.
Dude, the cherry
mm-hmm.
on the back end.
It's almost like a cherry cola.
Yeah, that's crazy. No, Max, what do you get?
I love it.
Yeah,
this is the best thing I've ever done.
Oh, I love it. It's.
Max is gonna go and be like, why did I
agree to do this?
Why did I agree to
it's
do
hot.
This?
It's hot. Oh man. I mean,
see, this is one I wish we had like a water droplet.
Yeah, to drag it in here. Hold on.
To
keep talking. I'm stepping off for a second. Go.
No, you're good.
Go.
Yeah, this is literally a baptism by fire. Baptism by fire.
My stomach is hot.
Yes.
My stomach's on fire.
These are the things that you, like, in a cold winter day, it warms the soul. Also makes you hate your life. But we've done, I think this is the 88th bottle that we've done on this podcast. And we've all gone through the same evolution of, like, the first time we were at higher proofs, we were like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Guys, what is, this is not,
yeah.
This is not smart.
This is water, if you would like to. Also, I'm going to get this over here.
What is it?
Oh, perfect.
Very Denver branded.
Sure. Ooh, I love it.
I love it. I love it.
Thanks.
Is it a Broncos? Right?
Yeah.
Kind of looks like sure.
Broncos. No, I didn't see a logo. I just see orange and blue.
Right?
I'll tell you, there's no, it's not a sour mash because there's nothing on the front of the tongue.
Mm-mm.
It's all on the back end.
I did not expect this little amount of spice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's way more cherry vanilla, cola.
How the hell they get it this sweet?
Well, is it malted?
So where does this come from, someone who has no, you know, range?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if I tried this and then 50 other ones, I'd at least be able to say, like, this is sweet, this is,
okay,
you know, because we've talked about it a bit.
And for a rye, this is very
for
sweet.
A rye,
okay.
This is sweet.
For especially
rye,
at a high proof.
High proof, it's sweet.
Especially for a high proof.
Because rye, so you ever had, like, a, you know, like Sour Patch Kids?
Yeah.
How they dry out your tongue? A lot of times, a high proof rye, you'll take a sip, there'll be flavor, but you'll feel your tongue actually dry out.
Okay.
Because it's sucking the moisture out. Mm-hmm. If it's on the sweet side, so it has a little bit higher sugar content, then it keeps the moisture. So like this one, I expected to take a sip and just dry my mouth out.
Yeah.
And it's not doing that. And you could tell. Like, it's usually on the very tip of your tongue. So for a high proof rye, this is on the sweeter side.
It's,
I know,
like,
that
candy,
sounds,
dude.
Insane,
I would not.
But
and here's the, Michter's is going to be more of a higher shelf kind of more regal distillery. They do put a little bit more effort in, but I almost don't want you to use this as a gauge for rye because this is
It's different.
This is totally different.
So because rye will use something to take the edge off. They'll use something called malted barley.
Okay.
And there's a lot of malted barley. It's the same type of barley that you would use for pastries, dessert, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. They take that same malted barley, which is where you get that sweetness in. And then again, it depends on the barrel. This is American white oak barrel, which is
it's like the standard.
It's the standard, right? Mm-hmm. Fun fact, from a real estate standpoint, the same buyers that buy the white oak for the bourbon barrels are also buying it for housing construction. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, the barrel distributors get first pick on the quality of wood.
Because they pay
so
more.
If you ever
that's
walk
why all
through
our
a house
framing sucks.
And the framing sucks, it's because
that's crazy.
the higher quality American white oak, which is the strongest oak that we have in the United States, is actually used for barrel bourbons.
Like
bourbon barrels.
Yeah. He told us that last week, that they literally go to war with home builders and construction companies because they're sought after this wood, and they're going, no. And because
and
we
their
know,
profit margin is so good, they're like, fuck you, I'll bid this out.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, anytime we do, you know, like new construction walks or framing and all those freaking knots, and you're like, dude, can we get rid of, why did you piece 5 2x4s together to make it look like it's sturdier? It's because the nice ones are in the
barrels.
So you're telling me that you guys are directly correlated with the housing shortage?
Yes,
100%.
By supporting this, that's fantastic.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I like to.
We need to keep housing.
Some people say manipulation is bad. It's just, you know, we're smart.
Just like to drink bourbon.
It's
that's
fine.
All.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, I mean, I'm interested to see kind of how this opens, especially because I almost don't want it to open anymore.
Yeah.
This is almost
too sweet.
Sweet
for a rye.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. I mean,
but I love it because what's funny is if you weren't here, Max, I would say, oh, no, this might be one that if you're thinking about getting into rye, you should try. I love it.
This man's face says otherwise.
Yep. Watch the video version, guys.
That's great.
Subscribe to the YouTube channel. No.
It's just going
to
be a montage.
Oh. Right?
My wife always makes fun of me. I mean, anything with alcohol. I take a sip and I go, you know.
Yep.
So this is, I'm trying my best to just not
choke it down.
No, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Does your wife drink?
Oh, yeah. She loves alcohol. So it's funny because she just makes fun of me all the time. I'm like, I don't know, a Shirley Temple with a vodka in it, please. Something.
Oh, yeah.
Old enough now that sugar gives me
a hangover
the next day.
Yeah.
So.
And it's Colorado, too.
Yeah.
I learned that when I moved here.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
The elevation messes with your hangovers like crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
And this is really all it, now it's so crazy to think, like, I only drink bourbon. Like,
yeah, that's only. All I drink. That's, yeah. I have beers in my fridge and IPAs and all that stuff. And I open it, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, like, yeah. But even now, it's like, I'm going to have one.
Yeah.
Whatever. But no, I'm interested to see how this opens. I hope the complexity is strong enough that it doesn't open even more.
It's
barrel more.
Strength, so you think it should.
Well, it's heavy. It has the oil weight of a barrel strength. But I just hope it stays more closed because I don't.
Yeah, barrel strength max just means that basically when the alcohol ferments and they pour it out, they do nothing to distill it at all. So whatever proof it comes out at, that's what it comes out at. So if you have like a, you know, a 40 or an 80 proof at 40% or a 94 proof at 48%, that means that the master distillers and the mixers went in and added water to get it to a certain ABV. Barrel strength, they just let it do its thing and they're like, all right.
They pop the bunghole.
Yeah.
So
sounds great.
So more open versus closed, if you could explain that.
As far as the
you're like, saying, I hope this isn't open anymore.
Yeah. So whenever you pour out alcohol and it's not capped, basically the second that it touches air, it starts to break down the alcohol molecules that are in the bourbon. So when we say it's opening, the longer that you leave it, think about it visually in your head as in carbonation coming from a bottom of a soda.
Yeah.
Every time that bubble hits the top, it releases some kind of flavor, some kind of aeration, whatever it may be. So when we say open, normally the longer that you let bourbon sit, the more the alcohol dissipates and more of the flavor comes through because the alcohol actually kind of dissipates off the top.
Mm-hmm.
So those flavors kind of sit at the top, which then takes in. And one thing that we do with JC's glass is we leave this sitting open. And these Glencairns, if you were to drink, go to a tasting room or whatever, these are huge.
Yep.
Like, again, I mean, five inch diameter on a Glencairn. It's supposed to be maybe three, like that.
Okay.
So the whole point of it is you see how it's shaped.
Sure.
With these.
Sure, keep the flavor, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's supposed to keep the flavor and the scent for whenever you're smelling.
Okay.
But simply opening just means, I like to think of it as, like, we had Heaven Hill Grain to Glass.
Oh, yeah.
And they work with a top agricultural research firm to source their grains.
Yeah.
And their bourbon tasted the exact same first sip to open an hour and a half later.
Okay.
So, which normally means that's a very high quality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's certain bourbons, which I think this is going to happen with this one, it's going to go from this to way too sweet.
Sure.
Other ones will go from complex to very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And those aren't quality bourbons. Yeah. But if you've got something that stays the same or adds complexity as it stays open, that usually means that the master distillers did something good in that barrel.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And so second sip, a lot easier.
Yes. And that, okay. So the first sip,
it's dissipating.
Yes. Well, the first sip, your palate's obviously like, you just poured alcohol.
Right.
Right. And then the second sip, that alcohol burn is already kind of satiated. Mm-hmm. Your mouth is already accustomed to it. So that second wash over your tongue, you actually get the flavors and the notes that come through. That first sip is 100% why most people don't drink bourbon or whiskey.
Right. Yeah.
Is because they go, ugh.
Well, it's called the neck pour for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think on the second sip then?
A lot easier.
Yeah.
For sure. Definitely still had to, you know, after.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's funny. From illegally drinking when I was a minor,
right.
That's what I remember.
Right.
And there's a lot of nostalgia there. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah.
Getting flashbacks.
And then you honestly, it's just wild the level that it brings too, because, you know, we're just, obviously now we're 88 bourbons in, so we're a little bit more seasoned when it comes to tasting, but there are people that when I like sommelier level bourbon tasters that will tell you where the grain came from, how it was distilled, everything down to a T.
Yeah.
And it's just the respect that I've gained for the process of distilling based on having distillers on the show, having the back end with barrel selling and stuff like that. The love and the appreciation that goes into such an American tradition, it's blown my mind.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to see how even like, I would take this and right now I would tell you like, out of almost all the bourbons that we've had, whiskeys that we've had, this is one that I would say I would not drink this without a cigar.
Yeah.
Because
well, you're doing that right now, but you know.
I'm just saying like if it wasn't a tasting here, we're sipping it.
Yeah.
I would only drink this with a cigar because the sweetness of this plus that spice would lend so well to like a light Connecticut wrap on a cigar.
Yeah.
It would be so good.
Yeah.
True.
That's another thing. Never experienced, you know, I've heard pairing the two, right? But cigars.
Yeah.
Geez, you're just sitting there for hours.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's like I always like to say, like, I've become like this, the definition of like man's man. Like, I love drinking bourbon. I love smoking cigars. I love being in nature, hiking and camping, cutting down trees. But I never, it's not that in my head. You know,
you're
what I mean?
Just
I don't think about it that
goddamn
way.
Paul Bunyan.
Right. And now, but being able to talk to people about bourbon at a certain level, it does put you in rooms with people in conversations that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah.
100%. Speaking of conversations, though, we've gone in on the bourbon a little bit here. Let's go ahead and jump right in. Jameson, I'm going to pass it off to you.
Okay.
Kind of build the structure a little bit. And honestly, Max, we're gonna lean on you heavy for this one because you have the insights, you have the knowledge, and we want you to kind of teach the viewers, teach people. And whether you're a consumer or you're an agent looking to get into real estate investing,
sure,
this is going to be a great episode for you. Yeah. So Jameson, go for it.
I think we're going to start with the question on everybody's mind because headlines are a thing, clickbait's a thing. And real estate just tends to be top of mind, whether it's because of inflation, whether it's because of rates, housing inventory, housing affordability, all of that. And specifically today, we want to talk about real estate investing. So my first question, and Max, this is going to be directed at you. Is it worth it to even consider investing in real estate right now in the current climate that we see?
Colorado in general.
I mean, we can go nationwide, but we all know there's pockets, right?
Right.
But just in general, what are your thoughts if somebody goes, hey, Max, should I even think about it?
Yeah. Yep. So with Colorado, we are in a very interesting spot. Our home sales are extremely low comparatively. Obviously, what goes up has to come down. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of folks that thought we would continue to go up, and we were in the same boat, you know, but everyone knew that at a certain point there had to be a pullback.
Right.
And so for investing, if you are looking at Denver, Colorado Springs, anywhere in between, then you are looking for an appreciation play. Your goal is to put generally at a 7.5% investor loan, you know, if you get lucky 7% if they drop whatever, current time frame, mid-April 2025, you're going to be looking at 30% down, maybe 35% down to cash flow appropriately with a traditional lease. Now, I'm saying 12 months, you know, you can get vastly more creative. My friend Miller has a book that just came out on Bigger Pockets on co-living, which is rent by the room. He has a premium of about, I believe, 50 to 100% over a traditional rent. Now, I personally don't, you know, I'm a realtor, my main job, I don't have the time to deal with that many separate leases.
Sure.
The headache factor is also up 50 to 100% more. But there are ways to get creative to cash flow if you have, say, less than that 30 to 35% down. The tough part is that we are in a state where people want to live, which is interesting. Coming from Nebraska, you know, not a lot of people are moving there. Nebraska, great. The beaches and the mountains, fantastic.
the vast ocean of corn.
Right. I totally
swimming
surf.
Through yellow.
Yeah. I was surfing.
You guys have a cool lake, though.
Swimming through the columns,
yeah.
Baby.
Yeah. So we're in a weird area because obviously we have an economic pullback, call it a recession, call it whatever you want. But as a whole, for the markets that we service, we are going what I like to call a Californication. And what I mean by that is our cap rates, they go in and out of kind of those, you know, I guess New York-ish California areas where they're extremely low. Your return is incredibly low. And you can't necessarily use a cap rate in the most... it doesn't transfer over to residential by any means. So anything below 4 units is going to follow the curve of value from residential properties because they're generally in residential property areas. Now with the gigantic multi-units, 150 units, obviously that is, you know, pure cap rate as your main source of underwriting or your first, you know, oh, is this a good unit or good property or not? So we're in an area where we're in a dip. Buyers have pretty much full control from the areas that I'm working. There are certain areas where I have buyers that can't get something, but they're looking for an extremely specific product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's some areas that are still hot, sought after, beautiful properties, great parcels of land. Those are going to hold their value forever, but you're paying a premium. So with that, you have the most strength you've had 6, 7, 8 years for negotiations. Our market is stagnating or falling slightly overall. But you also have people that secured those 2-3% mortgages 2-3 years ago. And while divorces, deaths, XYZ happens, if you are able to hold that, you're generally going to hold that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want your payment, even if you're upsizing, your payment's 2,000 now, moving into a house that's 4,000 square feet from a house that's 2,000 square feet, your payment's going to be like $5,000 or something crazy, you know, just numbers as opposed to the $2,000 you were paying. So with investing here, if you can find a way to get it to be creative, which is Airbnb, co-living, rent by the room, XYZ, converting any portion of the house into a rentable space is fantastic. Adding an ADU, which if you can do it cheaply, which is extremely hard, you know, that might be a good return, but it's an interesting area because you could hammer a good negotiation as a buyer and you can get a fantastic deal. And if any minute those rates turn down to say the fives, you're probably going to walk into $100,000 of equity, as we saw with anyone that purchased from 2019 to 2021, some in 2022, some people got burned really hard.
Really bad. Yeah.
But as an investor, I would say, as long as the numbers work, as long as you have enough capital for reserves, maintenance, XYZ, occupancy rates, you know, you need to underwrite this extremely lean, worst case scenario here. If you buy anything right now at a steady discount, pays for itself, you have enough money to service it, you're going to be on top of the world in 3 years.
Yep.
But we're just in this weird era of, we hyperinflated the dollar. We love to hyperinflate it again, you know, in 20 years, 10 years, whenever the next pandemic they have set up is.
I think the countdown's 9.5
Right, 9.5 years, 34 days, and seven minutes. But if you're able to secure a good property right now, then you're good.
No, I love that, especially because, and it's so interesting for me coming from, I tell you it on this podcast all the time, I come from like hippie mentality, like investment, credit cards, loan, wow, fuck you, that kind of stuff. And
you were in a van down by the river.
I legitimately was in a van down by the river. 2004 Honda Odyssey minivan, by the way.
It's a great car,
right?
Highly rated.
Yeah. But I love the insight in it because, again, it just goes to show, like, and we talk about this all the time, real estate is so often a personal and emotionally driven thing. But at the end of the day, it is an asset. And you have to look at the parameters that are set out for you. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that are, like you said, cap rate, maintenance fees and stuff like that. To the point where I feel like real estate investing, and you went to school for this, like this is structurally made, that it's gotten to a point now where if you are interested in it, talking to the right people like yourself, you can actually create a plan to get you where you want to go versus before it was almost this thing that was out of reach. And I love that you kind of focused on Colorado and what you said, the unique market, because I actually have a videography buddy here that moved here 4 years ago. He's been here. He's done phenomenal. He's actually succeeding very well. Shout out to Flatiron Creative Group here in Colorado. But because of the home prices, wanting to start a family and everything, he's relocating down to Texas.
Yeah.
And he showed me the property that he bought for $280,000 in Texas.
Yeah.
And I wanted to throw up.
Yeah, with a 2.5% property tax.
But still, at the end of the day, it's still $280,000.
No, yeah, I get
three
it.
Bed, two bath, half an acre of land. Yeah. Like, that for me, that is the idea, what I think I'm able to do right now. Okay. And I know that's so many different Americans are in that position.
Right.
But it just goes to show, even whether you're buying a home or investing in a home, the United States real estate market is so situational and geographically different that hyperlocal, that you have to take these applications, take these parameters, work them in a way that may be good for you. And if you love Colorado, it may be smart. I'm talking to myself here.
Yeah.
It may be smart to, you know, relocate, buy investment property elsewhere to then capitalize in the future.
Yeah.
Right. And Jimmy, what do you think about that?
No, I agree. I wanted to ask Max something too, because again, we're in the realm of social media, and I can go on and I can get information from all sorts of people, right? Mm-hmm. They could be very intelligent. They could be talking out of their ass. And I think this is why it's important. Like, I am a residential realtor, right? I don't deal in investments because it's not my specialty.
Yep.
I'm not in that world every single day. I'm not running my numbers, which again, somebody like Max who does it, who has a background in it, that's extremely valuable if you're looking at it. And I think now, to your point with affordability and it being hyperlocal, and Max, I'm just kind of taking this from what you said earlier. Would it be fair to say that from an investing standpoint in real estate, the goal right now would be to hit singles versus home runs? Like, you're just not necessarily going to get that cash flow deal that's going to set you up and allow you to quit a 9-to-5, right? Like, I was running some numbers just out for my own curiosity, and you're talking maybe $100 a month cash flow
Yeah.
Maybe breaking even, but that's not really, is that fair to say? Like, that's, if people are looking at it, that should be the focus and the, I guess, more the expectation than anything else.
So, again, situational.
Yeah.
So, there's so many different arenas for where a person is at, and a blanket statement will not service nearly, you know, 1% mm-hmm. of that. But investing in real estate, just odd, because we could be at the complete bottom right now or we could be at the top of negotiation power for buyers. And then, you know, I don't know, another pandemic, something, again, probably not going to happen, but it's one of those odd things where it's a deal by deal basis.
Right.
And so I wouldn't touch anything unless I'm living in it. You know, I pay $1,000 on top of my tenant's rent to pay for the mortgage. And then again, on the back end with the tax write-offs, XYZ, and you know, what I'm putting into the principal each month, I'm not actually losing any money.
Right, right.
So there's situations where negative cash flow, depending on how you set it up, mm-hmm. you know, it's actually more beneficial.
Sure.
And so cash flow isn't a great metric here because it's hard to achieve. Our property values are extremely high, and our rent to price ratio is
hold on. I want to pinpoint this. I want to put a target on that right there, because like Jameson said, the big thing is house hacking. You could buy a duplex, right. Live in one side and rent right. out the other. So again, just I want to reiterate, please pay attention to what Max is saying with how it is right now. Cash flow is not, I'm not going to say it's non-existent. It has to be done correctly. For you to get in at this point where the market is, please don't think that you're going to throw any kind of an investment, 50 grand, whatever, a down payment, and then 6 months later, you're going to be kicked back in Hawaii because someone's paying your rent. Like, mm-hmm. please understand that the way that real estate investing has been shown as, oh, these people are just dumping money in and they're sitting back, that's not how it goes. And Max, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but,
no,
but continue.
Please.
Go
yeah.
for it.
Yeah, so basically, it's just deal by deal. Mm-hmm. Get yourself with someone who knows their stuff. I have people that come to me that not waste a lot of my time, but they waste a lot of my time. And it's not their fault, but they have a grandeur dream of, we call it bigger pocket syndrome. And mm-hmm. we all love bigger pockets, you know. But it's
one of my favorite shows. I love bigger pockets. It's
one of those things where I meet a lot of people that, and this is 2 years ago when it was more popular, people, you know, everyone, mm-hmm. oh, buy real estate, you can't lose on it. If the media is, first of all, mm-hmm. talking about that,
right.
get mm-hmm. the fuck out of there.
Right.
like, if you know, you're getting the stock tip thing, a shoe shiner, whatever that story is, you know, if you hear a random guy on TikTok trying right. to tell you about real estate investments, they're probably going to try to sell you a course or something, and it's probably one of my friends. But
I love
it. It's deal by deal, and so you have to have someone in your corner, or you have to do the years of work to understand underwriting mm-hmm. and analysis. And even then, I mean, I've been, again, 6 offers on different duplexes and triplexes and XYZ for us, and we just offered what worked. And
right.
we got, I mean, 3 of them, we were just super close, got beat out barely. But the person that bought those, you know, I follow them, and I might, you know, stand outside their house one day and be like, sell it to me with a gun. But you took this from me.
Mm-hmm. You can open carry in Colorado Springs. It's
yeah,
it's a military
not,
town.
they're not making any money on them.
Right.
You know, they saw our offer, or the agent shopped, and you know, I'll probably buy something off market or whatever next round. But they saw our offer and they're like, oh, we'll beat it by, you know, 10, 20, X mm-hmm. amount of grand. And those people are hurting right now. Mm-hmm. And so it was a blessing in disguise, because with the stagnation and the higher rates, all of that stuff really doesn't work at anything
right.
that we lost on for their numbers. Again, deal by deal basis.
Yeah.
But I would say get someone in your corner that knows what they're talking about, and believe what they say. I have some clients that are very, you know, they don't understand the complexities of a renovation. And you know, I do, but even then I'm still green in that space.
Right.
And it's, you're a young professional couple and you're, you know, 30 range. Buying the duplex is probably, yeah, it's made me, I guess, a couple hundred grand or something, if you want to put it that way, or saved me or XYZ mm-hmm. from renting. But I tallied up how much I've worked on it, and that's how I was taught.
Yep.
Do all the stuff your own, and it's like 2,000-3,000 hours of it doesn't look any different. You know, like I cut down a wall, I painted everything, I cleaned up the yard, all this shit. And if I would have put that into my actual business and just bought $100,000 more on a nicer place that was well done, the financial literacy is just, you know, it's just tough in this country because we don't teach it.
Exactly. So,
we harp on it. Yes. We harp on it almost every episode. There's always something that comes up. We talk about financial literacy. And I think you brought up a great point because you have to have discipline. But the only way you can have discipline is if you have knowledge.
Structure.
Right? And the only way you can have knowledge is you're either getting that knowledge for yourself, doing the work, or you're partnering with somebody like Max that understands what they're doing. Because, and from what it sounds like, you guys have gone in to those offers on those duplexes, triplexes, with a very, very specific target. And you have not allowed things like, you know, emotion or stress or greed get in the way of going, you know what, if we can't get it here, then it doesn't work and we move on. And I think too many people look at the real estate investing space and go, I've heard this, I just got to get my foot in the door.
Right.
Well, not if the door chops your foot off. That's not a good place to be, right? Do it smart and understand what that looks like. So that being said, and again, I don't want to go too in-depth because we could have a 3-hour conversation about this, but can you go through a couple of, I don't want to say buzzwords, but things people hear a lot and just kind of from a real estate investment standpoint, if they hear it, what does it mean? First one, cap rate.
Yeah.
What does a cap rate mean? And what's a layman's way of just kind of calculating?
Sure. So cap rate is net operating income divided by purchase price. And so it's only for commercial use. And I like to use it just because that's kind of what I have experience with. A better way to look at properties is rent to price ratio, but then you cannot forget about taxes and other expenses depending on which area you're at. And so cap rate is, let's say, like at my old firm, we would buy an undervalued apartment complex in a secondary or tertiary market like Kansas somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, a population of 60,000 plus. We try to keep it under $100,000 a door, and we try to make sure that we can push up rents after making the property nicer. And so we buy at a specific cap rate, which, you know, let's just say like 5, 7, or 10% or whatever. And cap rate, the higher you go, the less stable a market is. So essentially your return goes lower the more stable a market is. And so Denver, I believe at its lowest for multifamily was 4.2%, which is an extremely, you know, apparently a good market to sit in. It's, mm-hmm. it's decompressed a bit. I think it's up 5-ish maybe, and I could totally be wrong. Haven't studied it in a while. But it's one of those things where, like my old firm, we'd buy it at 5%. We'd try to push it up to an internal rate of whatever, 7-10%, something like that. It was a 10-year hold.
Yep.
And then we'd sell it. And so for commercial, there's no emotion. There's no residential prices or, you know, you're in a residential area, you're buying a duplex. That duplex is going to be centered on the values of the houses that surround it, as opposed to a commercial building where the numbers need to work for an investor to put that $100 million into it. And so, yeah, pushing up cap rate is the number one thing that you do when you hold something and then you sell it at the market cap rate, which, like, say, cap rate when you buy it's 5% for market. You push it up internally to 8% or something, mm-hmm. or 12 or some ridiculous number, whatever you can get too high. And then you sell it back at that 5% cap rate. And so the equation, you know, I need to brush up on figuring out what it would sell for at the new rate. But essentially push up cap rate, sell it if you're a commercial holding firm of any sort.
So what if that, if you take that cap rate and then let's say the equivalent, you said rent to price ratio. So how does that work from a residential or duplex, triplex?
So you basically want, they don't really, they're two separate equations, and people say cap rate, and again, it just doesn't make sense for residential,
right?
Just because, so rent to price ratio back in the day, you would want 1% per month,
right?
And that's non-viable here. I haven't seen anything like that in years.
So 1% would essentially mean if you bought a house for $400,000,
yep, you get $4,000
four grand
a month. Yep. So then in theory, 7 years you could pay it off. That allows you enough of a margin, mm-hmm. to, you know, succeed. And so like where I'm shopping right now, you can still get that 1%
yeah.
Rent to price ratio, but the taxes murder it on the yeah. back end.
And so you're going to be underwater anyway.
Well,
not underwater, but
yeah, you're going to be worse off than that right. specific ratio. And then there's also cash on cash return, which is like, oh, I put 3.5% down on $1 million property, which that's a bad example. You're not going to get a loan on that, but or maybe you will with new loan limits.
If you're a VA.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mean,
so like a VA example, you know, if your closing costs are 10 grand, you put 0% down,
yep.
you somehow find a house that makes sense or quadplex that gives you $300 a month in cash flow. And it's very tight. It's very lean. But, and you'll have to owner occupy for a year, but let's say it's the second year and you've brought in a theoretical $3,600. You have 36% cash on cash return.
Because you put zero of your own money right. into the deal.
Right. And so you can get into infinite cash returns, which come into buying a really crappy property, a really distressed property, I should say, fixing it up. And then if you pull more cash out on the refinance than you have into it and it cash flows on top of that, that's when you get into infinite returns, which generally people pull them off every once in a while, mm-hmm. but
it's gotta be very, very, very good deal.
They're gone.
I'll tell you what though. It may be the rye whiskey talking here, but I just in that little burp that you were talking about with cap rates, I want to point this out. Please notice, listeners, viewers, please notice how he washed over residential. And the reason I say it like that is because this man, Max, that we have here today, he is the person that is being vilified wholeheartedly about investing, taking single family homes off the market, not adding and causing issues with the housing market. He legitimately just gave the playbook on what they do, and they don't care about residential. Right. It doesn't do anything for them.
Right.
And like, again, maybe the whiskey, but I'm just so tired of the vilification of people, of individuals who are trying to do this investment, because then I feel like it deters people like me and friends that I have from investing. Because even as you're talking, if I didn't go down this real estate pathway and I start learning, I wouldn't have understood mm-hmm. 2/3 of what you just said.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, and I see how not having the knowledge and not being mm-hmm. taught can lead to this disparaging opinion of like, no, these people are the elite. They're trying to take out everybody. They're trying to ruin it. Like, I come from that side. That's where I was before I started on this real estate journey. And it's just, it's amazing to me how, again, business is business,
yeah.
right? And investments are investments. You're not trying to go in and buy, you're not going to somebody who's foreclosing on a home right now in Colorado and going, hey, I'm going to make life easy for you. Let me buy that house from you. And then I'm going to make money on your house. You're not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's just not happening. You're good. It's just not happening. Right.
Jesus.
Can you break that down a little bit as far as why is residential not interesting to commercial investors, to firms that are looking to do these things?
So the best example of that is going to be the Zillow failure of 3 years ago. And if they would have implemented it in a different market cycle, maybe it would have worked, but they were also doing too many things at once. They were trying to flip houses. They were expecting, 5% appreciation for a 6-month hold, like, 10% annualized or something. And very interesting, because those guys have analysts.
I was going to say the data set they had,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about it before, and they got that so wrong, but it was like you said, it was a greed thing. Right? They were like, you know what? Yeah, houses will just continue to appreciate at 5-6% every single year for eternity. We can set market comps by offering this and then these next 5 houses offering this. And oh, by the way, labor's costs are going to stay the same. So flipping these houses right. aren't going to be that expensive. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a vacuum.
Oh, yeah. Again, you watch any market, and it was really tough to feel it in 2021 because the fear of missing out was so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel even disgusted about where I'm at, because my friends,
you're telling me,
yeah, you know, they
100%.
I had a chance to buy a house for really cheap in like 2017 or something, barely made 30 grand a year teaching tennis, got pre-approved, and I was like, oh, like $1,200 a month for a mortgage, like, oh geez. And I'd absolutely kill for that now.
Yeah, exactly.
But we didn't know what we didn't know. And so let's just take single family homes, let's go four units or below, which are residential by definition.
Right.
5 units plus, anything like up to 8 units actually does feel a little bit of pull from residential single family valuations. But So Zillow tried to do it, and very interesting. I don't know if they were trying to employ like no analysts and an algorithm. I don't know if they had the best data set ever, but it just turned
again,
out.
I'm sorry, but again, I just want to point out, notice how he said multiple living. Again, not a single one family living in one structure.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not, they're not looking for that. Okay. Yeah. Just sorry.
So it's one of those things where it's just, they failed at it, and they had the best set of information that mm-hmm. anyone could have. And it goes to show that they did not hedge appropriately. They did not have the reserves in order to ride the wave of whatever they intended, which, you know, who has, even corporations don't have 3-5 years of reserves to whatever weather. And so now's the time to buy, in theory. We could continue to go down, who knows. But it's one of those things where single family, while holding a portfolio of that, if you got it at the correct time and price, is amazing, great idea. You know, the benefits of that are awesome. But the maintenance and management of that structure is extreme. And so say Zillow was into flipping, but say they got into renting, big enough to do that. Or, you know, BlackRock, for example, if they're mm-hmm. buying a billion, trillion single family homes, the return on them is not where they need it to be. And so they, and I, again, I could be wrong. Some BlackRock guy could come murder me in my sleep after this, but it's one of those things where, like, once you cap out at like 10 single family homes, mm-hmm. as an investor, it gets nice, you know, you're generally doing okay, but you're going to get pretty annoyed, or you're going to have to pay a pretty significant sum in property management. And then to multiply that and try to get 1,000 single family homes with all of the problems that come along with them, because you also want to diversify that portfolio, and you probably only know one market.
Right.
And so, like, I would never want to buy 1,000 single families in Colorado Springs or Denver.
No.
I would never maybe have a portfolio of 100 there and 100 somewhere else. But even then, it's going to be far more easier, concise. Underwriting's going to be easier. Your analyst, XYZ, your entire team. If you're just buying one property with 100 units, mm-hmm. if that's your plan or play, mm-hmm. It's going to be so much easier than just buying single family homes. And so,
yeah.
Well,
no, I love it because in my head, right? We talked about this in a previous episode. And I just want to touch on the BlackRock thing because I go both ways, right? Number one.
Oh, do you, James?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yes, after a couple whiskeys.
You know what I'm saying? Don't tell Caitlin. But so a couple things. I do think that I would call them the mom and pop investors, people that own, call it 10 single family or less, right? Mom and pop investors. Those individuals, and I will die on this hill, will, because the numbers only work in certain scenarios, will go and buy those homes in underserved areas. Most of the time they need work, right? Which a corporation, like we just talked about, is not going to go in and fix up those properties. So my contention is, when you're looking at investing and you're going to those areas that are either underserved, you know, economically divested, whatever that looks like, you're actually bringing inventory to the market. Mm-hmm. Now, it may be just from a rental standpoint, right? But if you're taking a dilapidated home or 10 dilapidated homes in an area, and then you're fixing them up and you're renting them out to families in that area, that's 10 extra homes that you have that were not available previously. Mm-hmm. Secondly, to Max's point, and this was just kind of a light bulb moment for me, when you look at single family investing versus multifamily, the point he's making is, if you've got everything in one spot, it's cheaper and easier to upkeep, mm-hmm. to underwrite, to do all those different things. And the stat that popped into my head was, if you look at BlackRock, who I think has, I just looked at, they have $113 trillion under financial management, just in general. They have a very large real estate presence, right? I want to say they own, it's obviously over, I think it's over 15, 20,000 units, single family, that BlackRock owns, operates as rentals. 32% of their real estate holdings, as far as single family and small multifamily, four and under, are in one city. And it's Atlanta, Georgia.
Makes sense.
And they do that for the same reason that multifamily makes more sense than single family, because the market in Atlanta, with really just movie production, has short-term and mid-term mm-hmm. rentals coming in all the time, but they can manage those a lot easier if it's just in the metropolitan area of Atlanta versus 10 here, 20 here, 15 in Omaha, right. 5 in Provo, Utah. It doesn't make any sense because, for the most part, they have one contract that's going to go do all those different things.
Yeah.
And I think something that...
But the multifamily is what, in my head, I go, that makes a lot of sense. Yes. Why it's easier to underwrite because all of your shit is in one spot.
Yeah.
It's a your vertical is great.
Yeah, you don't have to have a team in seven different areas.
Exactly,
as well.
Or manage seven different teams in seven different areas.
And so, Max, let me ask. So I think personally, especially like I said, with the understanding that I had before this, I think that it feels so unattainable for many people because, like we said, we're not taught, right? We're not taught money management. We're not taught finance investment-wise and how to grow our own personal
investment. I was taught how to make my own boxers, though, in middle school.
Oh, there you go. I learned how to cook in middle school.
Home ec, baby.
Yeah.
I'm from Nebraska. I didn't go to school.
You went to 4-H. You know how to ride a horse.
So, Max, what I'd love to do is just as a bit of value for the consumers, for listeners, whoever thinking, if you were talking to somebody who had never heard about real estate before, who never even thought about it, who is in this boat of, you know what, this is unattainable for me. All these people that make all this money, they're ruining my opportunity. How would this person, what would you recommend from step one? They go, you know what, I want to get into real estate investing. Can you kind of take us through that path and what that looks like for them?
Yeah. So nothing's passive. It's all a job. So if you treat it like a part-time job, which it requires you to at least treat it like a part-time job, if not full-time, you'll be fine. And what I mean by that is adequately studying for it and understanding what you're getting into before you do it. The unfortunate portion of 2018 to 2022 was that anyone could do it. And so I have multiple people that I know that have lost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars thinking that they could flip something. Didn't do proper due diligence, didn't ask the right questions, didn't talk to the right people. And if I could have snagged them for one conversation, I would have saved them 10, 20, 100 grand. And of course they don't, you know, they would have never put that correlation together.
Right.
So thankless job sometimes. But I'm also, it's like taking candy away from a baby sometimes. I have to tell people like, this is stupid. You don't want to do this. You'd be better renting. I don't care if I make a commission off of this. I don't want my name associated with this deal when you're cursing this here in a year. Or if you're so gung-ho about it and you think it's going to work, which always there's a chance that I'm wrong. I'm wrong often. But it's one of those things where if you're starting out, learn.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have to do. Like I read 10 pages of a new book every single day, whether it's centered on negotiation, whether it's centered on real estate investments, underwriting, XYZ. And if you are purely intent on becoming a real estate investor, take 30 minutes out of your morning to do something similar, some form of learning action, even an audiobook, which it does not stick properly for me. I know people that can listen to it and they're fine with it. But it's one of those things, just you have bankruptcy on the line, you have tons of money on the line for making an improper decision in which one tip could have saved you from. And so there's multiple books that I have for recommendations and I give them to, you know, all of my clients, everyone. It's like, hey, just read this so you can understand how this works.
And if you guys want to know what those are, we're going to get with Max. I'll put that in the description of the video and the episode.
Yep.
So you guys can take it. And learn on it. Because at the end of the day, guys, please take me as an example. Like I said, please, please, please. I know I talk about it a lot. But again, I would have looked at someone like Max in the past and been like, same as you. You're just taking advantage of the market.
That guy's super hot. People.
Right?
Wow.
Right? Have you seen this man's hair?
I can't believe he's 6'5".
But like, I would have been that person. And I think it's just important. I say it all the time. I wouldn't know what I know now if I didn't just take the chance. Mm-hmm. And open a book, read a little bit, talk to somebody. So Max, let me ask you, if somebody were to go on Google and they wanted to start learning about real estate investing, what is the title that they would search for to reach somebody like you? Or what are some of those assets that they could acquire to make it easier for them to give them more knowledge?
Yeah. So the nice part about the internet age that we're in is that there is an incredible amount of free knowledge. There is a certain point which you are not going to go past on your first 2-3 deals, whatever, where you have to pay, you know, to go past that portion, which is fair because you're going to be making an extreme multiple of whatever you're paying. But if I were a new person, I wanted to learn about real estate from the get-go, I would probably start, first and foremost, set the tone. I am not going to execute on anything for 6 months to a year.
Okay.
One of the biggest problems that I see is, I want to do this. And then next week, well, I looked at self-storage and that looks great. And I'm in the boat of, it's been the sweetheart of investors for 3 years, you're not going to get a single thing. There's just so many different ideas. So first you have to hone your strategy, and then you're looking to dive deeper into that. And so as much content as you can consume from people that are reputable sources is going to be your bread and butter, I would say. And reputable sources is an iffy thing, because sometimes, I mean, I've been fooled by people before.
Sure, yeah.
So I would say that's a very intricate question, because it's just, what do you want to do? And so let's just take the easy route. I want to own single family homes as rentals. I would first and foremost go to a real estate meetup. I would find someone that owns 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 units, something like that. Not 30. They don't care about you. That you're a waste of their time. Not in a bad way, but don't waste their time. Maybe they'll work with you one day if you
get to that point.
Or maybe try to buy them a nice lunch, something. That's my favorite thing. A lot of people can't say no to a free lunch. But go to a real estate meetup. Find some guy that is 2, 3 steps ahead of you. I had this advice from, I believe, one of my friends, Tanner Miller, something a couple weeks back. But if you're able to find a mentor who's at the next step, that is far more beneficial than trying to replicate someone that's at 30. Because the guy that's at 30 units was able to buy those units when they were appreciating 10% or whatever per year, ridiculously. His numbers are going to be far different, and his situation is going to be
relevant.
Far different than yours. Mm-hmm. And I mean, after that, there's fantastic, you know, Bigger Pockets is great. Tons of podcasts about real estate investing. They're all fantastic, but it's a very large ocean of people creating content now. And so I would say go to the source in your city, a real estate meetup of some sort. Find some people there that are reputable. Maybe double check them as well. Don't pay anyone any money to give you a course or something. And then, you know, go from there, because that's it's just so dependent on the area.
I just want to kind of summarize, right? So what I'm hearing is, number one, you want to establish your goal. Like, what do you want to accomplish, to Max's point? Is it single family? Is it multifamily? Is it Airbnb? Is it short-term, midterm, vacation rentals, whatever it is? Because to Max's point, if I want to do like long-term rentals, right? That's what I want to do. Long-term, single family rentals. I'm not going to go to somebody that's 2 or 3 steps ahead of me that their entire business is Airbnb, because it's not relevant to what I am trying to do. So I think it's a great point that he brought up, is define what you're trying to accomplish first. Then find those people that are accomplishing that thing, but not too far ahead.
Right.
And in the meantime, consume the knowledge in that same area, right? So that you can have a nice vertical, like we talked about with multifamily versus single family, where everything aligns. And I think the underrated part of this, and I know you've been involved a ton, is the networking portion is life-changing.
Yep.
You could have all the knowledge, you could read all the books, you could practice, go on Excel, write up P&Ls and worksheets and cap rates and all that. But if you're not networking with the right people, you're just essentially just leaving opportunity on the table.
Right. Yeah, no, networking, number one. Just, I've learned so much from the people that were nice enough to listen to my shitty jokes. So,
dude, and everybody, like, I do it all the time, right? And you and I, we were joking about it earlier. Like, people, our job is answering, and I'm sorry about this, stupid fucking questions from people, right? But some of my best relationships have been because I've made myself available to those individuals because they don't know what I know.
Yeah.
And to me, maybe it's a stupid question, but to them, they generally don't do this except every 5 to 7 years when they decide to buy or sell.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those things where you'll find people that have that common interest. And much like we do, like, I know if you get into a good real estate conversation, you could talk for hours, you could talk for hours, I could talk for hours. You'll find those individuals that all of a sudden you walk away, you're like, holy shit, I know a lot more than I did 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so I guess, Max, what if they're looking for a networking, they're going to a real estate thing, a real estate networking event to meet realtors, stuff like that, who should they target? And what I mean by that is it somebody who is, you know, saying, hey, I'm a real estate investor, or somebody that's saying, hey, I'm willing to teach you guys, I'm willing to bring you along on the journey. What should somebody look for to really get the best opportunity to learn?
Sure. Yeah. So, I'm sure there are realtors out there that are good to target first. But for the most part, what I would recommend, and this is just my personal experience, is, but you know, a pure investor, or maybe they have a W-2, but they have 10 rentals or something. Mm-hmm. it depends. It's tough because at a certain point you begin to make so much money that you don't have time for the realtor side of stuff. So if you can find someone that's actually transitioned out of it, that's a pretty good sign, as funny sure. as it sounds. I love all my clients to death, and I'll probably be a realtor forever, but it's one of those things that if I have to transition out of it just because, then it's, you know, just because, just like the managing broker mm-hmm. that I went under to provide better service. And I'll still be overseeing, you know, some brokers right. to help out my previous clients, of course. But it's just tough. Because I would just say anyone that has a verifiable, you know, a good amount of rentals, they're not pretentious, they're not trying to sell you something from the get-go. But there's also another side of that, which is you are not worth their time. They are spending money to provide you with advice. And I'm happy. I've helped a lot of people, thousands and thousands of hours of free advice. But at a certain point, it becomes too much. So if you can somehow provide that person value, which I always say $10,000 lunch fund for the year, which I've never even hit that number. But if you spend $5,000 on just being like, hey man, I know you don't have time, but I'll take you to a nice dinner here and I'm not going to say a word or I might ask some questions, but just tell me about your story. You know, everyone eats. And if you're lucky enough, you'll be able to grab them. But even then I've had people flat out, my current managing broker 2 years ago, was like, hey, can I take you to lunch? No. I was like, wow, that guy's a total dick.
Right.
And then I was, you know, talked to him a couple times and he just doesn't have time. He doesn't have time. He's amazing at running the business. But if he were to go to lunch with me, that set him back 2 hours
sure.
on the other stuff. He'd be going to bed at 11 because he works till 9 p.m. every night. And so it's tough to weed out people. And you're going to get some duds. You're going to have people ask you to lunch, or you're going to take people to lunch and you're going to go, this guy has no idea what mm-hmm. he's talking about. I've had a guy that he's asked me to lunch for years now. And I was finally like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And sure enough, he's just on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Just like every 3 weeks, I'm going to do this, X, Y, Z. And it's just, dude, if you spent the same amount of time that you spent on the first thing we talked about 2 years ago, like you'd be far past me. And so it's just, you know, it's tough, but you got to feel it out.
No, I love it. I honestly, I love that insight only because it I think it all boils down to it. Like, can we move to a one rock takeaway?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So Max, what we do at the end of our episodes is we do what's sure. called a one rock takeaway. And what that is a concise kind of, we try and keep it short, thought yeah. on the end of the episode. we try. Yeah. Basically,
valiantly.
Yeah. Basically kind of culminating all of the thought from the episode into one final statement, one final thought. And I think for me, the one rock takeaway for today's episode is know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, even myself that's been involved in real estate now for 3 years, been learning, I listened to the podcast, all of that, just the hour and 8 minutes that you were willing to dedicate to us, where we made you drink bourbon or whiskey that you didn't necessarily enjoy. And
it was
you,
great.
You know, you choked it down, it was, right? Like
for even, the podcast,
even
it was
just
fantastic.
This amount of time, I've gained a new perspective yep. on investing that I wouldn't have had previously from just having this conversation. And so first off, thank you for taking the time to come sit down with us. Cause this,
no,
I think
you guys.
so much value in the conversation here, but seriously, just know what you don't know and be humble enough to admit you don't know it and learn about it. That's my one rock takeaway.
Mine is going to harken back to something Max just said about taking somebody to lunch. Right. And it's the overall idea is you're getting started in any kind of business that deals with people. Okay. You have to become very good at trading value for value, right? Like a lot of people, and that's why I want to bring it up because he pointed out eloquently, a lot of people will just come to ask for something and not be willing to provide. And some people do that because they don't think they have value to provide, mm-hmm. right? Like if I'm going to go talk to some big shot investor, I may look at it and go, I mean, I don't have anything knowledge wise to give this guy. That's fine.
Yeah.
Then find something else of value that they might need. And in this business, as I continue to grow in my own business with clients, and like I said, I'd love to get way more in depth with the investment side of it. It is all about trading value for value. And when you get really, really good at that, it will put you in a different stratosphere than most people because you're doing something with the intent of giving value and then getting value back. And most of the time, if you're giving value, you don't even have to ask for value back. It'll just show up. Yeah. So I think that's that was one of the more profound, you said a lot of profound things today, sir. And we do appreciate you coming on, man. It's been awesome. And I love having these conversations with experts because it's just a whole different level of conversation. But to me, out of everything we talked about, getting good at trading value for value, I think is a skill that not a lot of people have, and it can take you so far.
Yeah.
And people just don't realize it. So.
Yeah. And there's even if you don't have value, I still appreciate, because I have so many people that come to me that know far more than I do. And boy, that pisses me off more than anything on earth.
Same.
Because it's, okay, I get it. You read a book. Like, cool. I've read that book and 17 other ones centered on the subject, and I can tell you that you're incorrect about certain items. But even if I have people that don't necessarily have value and they just genuinely want to learn, I would have killed for someone to tell me, like, I did well on you know, the duplex. Great. But if I had, like, two people in my position right now, I guess 3-4 years later, that would have just said, oh, this is here, do this. I mean, it couldn't have got much sweeter, but it could have been saved 20 grand or kept 20 grand
right.
or 100 grand if I got really lucky or something. But don't be afraid to ask. Just, like, show the humility of asking. And my favorite story about this is I taught Bill Gates tennis 2 years in a row when I was at the top of that career. And not that I was anything special, but he would come to Happy Hollow Country Club in Omaha. And they did it for Buffett Days or whatever. The first year
I tried. The Oracle of Omaha. Get it.
Yeah. So they'd come for Warren Buffett, his, you know, partners, whatever. And I still have his coach's number. And periodically, I try to make it every 6 months to a year. I'll text his coach or I'll call him and be like, hey, are there any spots on the team available? There's no team. It's that guy. When he quits, that's it. There's
right.
no one. Or if he gets fired or whatever. And he always says, no, sorry, you know, that position. He's like, you know, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
I'm teaching Bill Gates this week. You little idiot from Nebraska.
I love that.
Great dude. But he knows, like, hey, man, if there was ever anything to leave, and, like, yeah, I play tennis a bit. I haven't taught in a couple of years now. But if there's anything that I could leave for something, you know, I'm going to go teach Bill Gates tennis
right.
and hopefully get invited to Epstein's Island. One of my goals, of course.
I heard it is a great
time. I've heard it's great.
Great.
Epstein's Island 2.0.
The Yelp reviews are out of this world. It's
but,
awesome.
Like, I have nothing to provide for that
yeah.
man, you know?
Right.
And he's offered me free court time in Indian Wells. He's done
yeah.
very... He's just nice enough that I'm, you know, I text him like, hey, man, I look up to you extremely. And I know I'm an idiot compared to you. But if he ever needs a different personal coach, you can't do it. I would like to think that I'm next in line.
Sure.
And now,
sure.
am I qualified for that anymore?
Eh.
Maybe. But
yeah.
I'm going to fake it.
Fake
and I'm going to try to get in it.
Fake it to
you're better than Bill Gates. So realistically.
Right. Easy enough.
Still exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
And, you know, I was a great coach, but still nothing
your
of value.
Your joints are in better shape. You'd be fine.
Right. Right. You've... Nothing of value to add to that guy.
Right.
But he's nice enough to at least say no every
right.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully one day, I think, I don't know. I have cool opportunities ahead of me. But if he were to be like, hey, man, it's, you know,
yeah.
I can't do it. My knee's busted.
Yep.
Probably going to go do that.
Yeah.
So,
Max's One Rock takeaway, jump on opportunities,
yes.
put yourself
yeah.
out there.
Absolutely.
Because you never know.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? I love it. Well, let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review, whiskey review for today's episode. And just as a reminder, on today's episode, we are drinking Michter's limited release small batch rye whiskey, barrel strength rye whiskey. I'm interested to, I got to grab JC's glass before anything. Go for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Yeah.
It did what I thought it was going to do,
mm-hmm.
where it went all the way to the sweet side. Like, it is all caramel, vanilla.
I will say the nose didn't change, though. Yeah, the nose didn't change. The complexity's there. But as the person with the glass that's been sipping... 100%, I'm there with you.
Right?
It didn't just go. It, if you guys have seen like an avalanche, it just slid down into that sweet portion. Like 100%. What does the taste on JC's glass like? Let me see.
Mm.
Gimme.
No, I think the nose stayed, but I think the evolution was the same.
Okay, I just took a sip of JC's. No, mine's been open. I'm going to take a sip.
JC would be so pissed, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The nose stayed.
Nose stayed.
But the rest of it went.
I mean, the spice stayed through.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I'm still getting the spice on the tip of my tongue. But
for you,
yeah.
Did it get slightly sweeter? Like,
did it get easier to drink?
Easier to drink.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely virgin to all of this. So it's.
I mean, dude, credit to you. You finished it.
Definitely
glass,
got
dude.
Easier to drink.
Right.
Yeah.
But couldn't go past anything right. that's of value.
Right. No, that's good, though, because to me, honestly, if this was going to be like a highly rated bourbon, I would have expected, especially for Max being brand new to it, it would have been the same reaction first sip to last.
Yeah.
That would have actually told me that this is a fantastic bottle because it held its stones for an hour and 15
minutes. So if it sucks for me throughout the whole thing.
And it's yeah.
Well, if it sucks for okay.
you. No, right. Exactly. No, if it sucks for you throughout the whole thing. For the longer period of time, cool. the better the whiskey.
It makes you stronger. Well, no, makes you stronger.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously, I give you all the credit in the world because you literally came in at what I would say is the most off-putting side of bourbon and whiskey.
Yeah.
Legitimately. Yeah. 100%. And
yeah, you got to be a bourbon lover to enjoy.
Yeah. You sip through it.
Which is not our intention.
Like,
we play Russian roulette with Chris.
Yeah,
Chris. He just gives us a bottle.
Sure.
So we don't tell him beforehand. It's a surprise every time.
Yeah. But honestly, so with this one, I'll tell you that
it got too sweet.
Got way too sweet. I'm talking like
completely.
Yes. Max, this is where you nod.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm talking like
I agree.
This
I
is
agree.
Like
I concur.
It got to the point where it was like I would use this as cough medicine. And I'm not talking like the old Forrester 19 the Prohibition.
This, for
yes.
sure.
I'm just saying, like, it got to that level of sweet where it's
it was almost
too much
yes,
of it. Which for a rye, just I think they overcompensated.
They did.
I think they were trying to
it's
off
like they're
put,
driving a lifted truck.
Like, I love it.
I drive a Prius.
Yep, see, undercompensated.
I love it. But
you
no,
don't know
it,
this man's packing.
It was 100% like I said, the nose stayed. Even in my glass.
Yeah, the nose stayed.
But it
should because it's fucking 110.
But I will stay in my glass. The sweetness does punch through on the nose.
Yes.
Like, I no second pour, twirling around the entire episode. It's, I mean, more chocolate cherry than that graham cracker that you would expect from the rye because of the higher, like, the malted barley side of it. But,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I
don't hate it. It just,
I don't know. If somebody would, and you know, it's funny because I always say, Max, I always say like, oh, if somebody was getting into bourbon, I would recommend this one.
I wouldn't, though.
I wouldn't.
No.
No, because I feel like this would be, hey, like I would say that to them and they would take a sip expecting to like it.
Yeah.
And then it would just destroy.
And they would punch you in the face and walk out. Yeah. That's what happened. Like, how dare you?
Okay. So, all right. So hold on. Let me get the sips in.
I got my rating. So you tell me. Do we know the pour on this? Like how much?
No.
I would assume it's probably about 20.
Yeah, 20 to 25. Probably.
So would you pay?
No.
20.
If I could pay 20 for something else, I would.
Okay.
I'm going to lean on the rock rating for this. I think I'm going to take this at a 3.8.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Out of 5?
Out of 10. So, oh, sorry, Max. So how we rate, really how bad. We rate our, yeah. So how we do our rating is on a scale of 1 to 10.
We do everything backwards.
One like being, and it's called our rock rating. 1 being the best, 10 being the worst.
Oh.
Because
okay.
the more rocks, the more water you put into a bourbon, usually the worse it is.
Sure.
So, because you're trying to get that flavor to open or whatever it may be. So the higher the number, the worse.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, I,
for
the
context,
proof,
our best bourbon we've rated was a 1.4.
I think for this guy, it being a rye, it being 111, I think it just misses where it needs to be with what the bottle is. And I love Michter's. I think Michter's makes a great juice. I think they have a great process. They're standard in the industry, but I think that they missed on this one and they tried to overcompensate for the rye too much. And it leans too sweet for me.
Okay. So I'm usually the less harsh one of the group. I'm going to go with a 4.5.
Yeah.
Specifically because of the proof.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that this proofing should taste like this after an hour of being open.
No.
And I sipped through, this is my second one, so I've sipped through two. And it just, like, it's, and I have a sweet palate.
As I say, you guys know I love the Swedish side, but this went way too far.
Yeah, I wouldn't walk. So I want to say, and we can verify from Chris. I want to say it's between $20 and $23 a pour for this. I would not pay this to drink this. I just wouldn't.
I'd get an old soul.
I'd get something else. Yeah,
I'd get an old soul. 100%.
Four and a half.
Max, share with us. What are you thinking?
I love it.
Stupid.
It's gonna make the drive to Nebraska a lot better, though.
Yeah. I'm excited for my wife to drive me and for me to do work after this. It's gonna be awesome. Get the hotspot out, you know.
Thursdays are normally my least productive days.
Or
I just get everything done between like 7 a.m. and 10. And then I'm like, you know what? Yep. I'm out for the rest of the day.
It's one of those weeks, you know, where I'd like to make some money. So
you know, it is important.
I like it.
That's important.
It'd be cool.
All right, if you had to, so as somebody who literally came in blind, how would you explain this? If somebody would say, yo, tell me about this bottle, what did you think? How would you explain it to them? And you can be as brash, as honest, as straightforward. If you want to say it's hot and tastes like shit, you say that. All right. What would you tell somebody?
As funny as it sounds, I don't mind it after the first sip. It's still alcohol.
Yep.
You know, but I don't know. I didn't mind it too much. I like sweeter items, so it's not bad.
Okay.
I'm
okay with that because honestly,
that's good for
a lot of the time.
Dude.
People who drink whiskey bourbon,
he would have just thrown it back in my face.
Oh no, I party. Yeah. I know how to party. I just don't know how to drink alcohol.
I love it. No, and honestly, it's thank you for the insight because at the end of the day, this is bottle number 88, and I've gotten so far away from that perspective, that feeling of, and I remember it just taking a sip, and you're like, like your health is
crazy. Back. The first like. Sip, I was like, oh.
Yeah, like I'm in for a long fucking day.
Like, I, huh.
Why did I agree to this?
Like, wow, all right. You know,
I love it.
After that, it's fun. I could see, especially like on a weekly or however many days basis, you acquire a taste for something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's also, is it just hanging out with your friends, talking shit?
That's
the fun part.
Dude, so I'm so glad you bring that up because we talk about this a lot too. There are certain bourbons where you know if you were just with a group of friends having a conversation, which is how this entire thing started, there's certain ones that are just like, you know what? I could sit by a fire pit and just talk shit about real estate for 3 hours.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we take that into account. There's been some bourbons that weren't the greatest, but the conversation was so good. And I'm like, well, shit, I'm going to rate this higher because I could sit there and you know, talk to you guys over whatever. So I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. All right. So Max, let the people know if they want to get into real estate investing, if they have any questions or if they want to bring you out to lunch, add some value for you, where can they reach you? How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah. So, I've recently changed all of my, handles. So that MF Realtor, that's my new one. So you reach me there, but basically have a website, you know, maxfergusonrealtor.com. I also have mfhomegroup.com as well. And Colorado Springs, any investments, or Denver as well. I service both. Any investments that you might have, you just type in Max Ferguson Realtor. You'll find my page top.
So. Do you, Max, do you service, so Springs to Denver?
Yep.
Do you have anywhere outside of that that you do? Like, do you go south to Pueblo-ish? Do you go north?
Yep. So I have recently compressed, but I also do Summit County as well.
Okay,
and perfect. So
beautiful.
I've had a few clients up there that like to get ski condos
and
heavy money down for those puppies, but when you have a lot that you need to write off in a year from a loss, it still makes sense. So
cool,
that as well. And I'm also raising capital for multiple different projects, so if you want to invest in apartment complexes by any means, please reach out as well.
Awesome. Email address for them to reach out to you, just is it straight through the
So Max at symbol M as in Mary, F as in Frank, homegroup.com.
And all of this information will be in the description. If you guys want to reach out to Max, learn anything, invest in anything, please reach out to him. He's, to me, the younger investors, the ones that are having to adapt to this market, these are the ones that you want to talk to because this is not, and we've talked about this before, what we are experiencing in real estate has never happened before. Yes. And so somebody like Max, who is not only in the market currently as a realtor doing residential, but then also doing investing, he's going to be able to give you insights that we wouldn't even be able to give you.
Well, and from, investing himself.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. We talk about experience all the time. So
please reach out. Yeah. But as always, you can reach out to us. And you guys know one reason we bring people like Max onto the show is because we have a network that we can put you in touch with.
Yep.
If you have any questions around investing, whether it's I want to do a duplex, I want to do a single family, reach out to us at any time, RESOTR@themilehighperspective.com, or give us a text or a phone call.
720-584-3361.
And remember, guys, leave us in the comments. What do you want us to see? What do you want to see us drink? And if you want to come on the podcast, let us know. We're more than happy to give those insights. But at any time, please feel free to reach out to us. Subscribe and like the channel. Max, thank you so much for coming out.
Thank you, guys. That was fun.
Last teaser, because I think we'll have Max on again. He put himself on the side of a bus, which that will be a whole other episode on marketing, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Didn't work.
Is it still, real quick, before we jump off, is it still? No, it's off the bus.
No, that was the most money I've ever spent on anything with zero return on anything. And so we'll talk about it. My clients are like, no, like it was a good buy. And I'm like, no, you say that because you think I'm funny and you laugh at my jokes. But like, I mean, I got 20, 30 million views online.
Sure.
Like, it went viral.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day,
the return was nothing.
Well, you're going to show it to your brother, who's a realtor.
Right.
You know, and you're going to be like, oh, look at this guy. He's hilarious. But you're not going to cut the familial ties or the guy you went to middle school with from some guy that put a hilarious slogan on a bus.
I
will get you a better deal than your brother-in-law, but at the end of the day, is it worth it at the dinner table at Thanksgiving? I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
it's to be determined.
I love it.
On that note, Max, thank you for joining us. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers, boys.
We'll catch you guys later.
Yeah, I'm almost out.
I was getting it done. Scared.
See you next week.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And for the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective.